your cowering yet?
Calm.
Not worry. Who remembers something from yesterday?
Finally, Arjuna will be coming and Krishna will be taking tour of the...
That's pretty good. You remember something from today. It's class. It's even better.
I know.
Anyone remember anything else?
The discussion about all the palaces.
How many palaces? Yeah, 16,108 palaces for the queens. And how many palaces altogether?
900,000.
Same number as?
The third
cows of Nandamaras. And they were very, very beautiful. So Narada Muni came into the palace because he was very desirous of seeing the wonderful pastimes of Krishna. Now, what wonderful thing was mentioned?
Simultaneously, he married the 16,100 daughters of
kings. Simultaneously married them?
In different places?
Yes.
Inconceivable.
Unless you do it with... I thought of a way you could do it with monitors, computers and monitors. But that's not what Krishna did.
And virtual marriages.
Virtual marriages. It's actually there. But there was one Krishna there. So and the palaces were so beautiful. And the peacocks, when the peacocks were myoring on tops of the buildings, on the roofs of the buildings, and when they saw the great incense smoke coming out of the lattice windows, they would dance, thinking it was the rainy season and these were clouds. So Krishna was there. So he noticed when Narada came in, and Krishna is the Supreme Lord, is the greatest upholder of religious principles. Thus when he noticed Narada, he rose at once from the goddess Sri's bed, and he bowed his head at Narada's feet, and joining his palms, he had the sage sit at his own seat. Now, while this is going on, consider how you think Narada felt. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I'll explain here in the purport. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur speaks on this. The Lord bathed Narada's feet and then put the water on his own head. And Narada is a devotee, and he's always conscious of the position of the Lord, so he felt so that this is not correct. Although the Lord is the supreme spiritual authority of the universe and the master of his devotees, it was proper for him to behave in this way, for his name is Brahmanyadevaya, Brahmanyadeva, the Lord who favors the Brahmanas. Thus, Sri Krishna honored the sage Narada by bathing his feet, even though the water that bathes the Lord's own feet becomes the
Ganga,
which is the ultimate holy shrine, the ultimate Tirtha. Ganga Tirtha. So this is quite amazing how Krishna is acting. He acts in such astounding ways. And why does he act the way he does? There are principles behind what he does, but the ultimate principle is that he is independent and he does what he wants for his own purpose. So what is the purpose of the Lord's acting in this way towards Narada? And the answer is given in the verse, really, because the Lord is Brahmanya Deva. He is very affectionate and to the Brahmins, and he is very respectful to the Brahmins. Now, why is the Lord respectful to the Brahmins? And why is the Lord teach by his example that one should respect the Brahmins? They protect his culture. And also they are a repository of spiritual knowledge. And that is the means by which they protect the culture. Because the Brahmins are meant to be, and this is not a hard question, in which mode of material nature? They're supposed to be in sattva-gun, or the mode of goodness. So it is a completely different society when the person leading the society, when the people who are given the most respect are in the mode of goodness. Mm-hmm. Why? It's because their perspective on life is different, and therefore the whole society will be led in a proper way. If the people who are leading society, who have all the power in society, are in the mode of passion, then they will lead the society in that way. And if the people who run the society are in the mode of, or lead the society are in the mode of ignorance, they will lead the society in that way. And just looking at this, we can see what the cause of, the main cause of the problems in today's culture, so-called culture, is that the leaders are the wrong people, and they're being led by the wrong mode of ignorance, the wrong mode, the mode of passion, mostly the mode of passion and with ignorance. But very rarely you find someone who has even knows what the mode of goodness is, or even ever glimpses it, practically speaking. So if someone in the mode of goodness is the most respected person in society, and the people who have the power, who are the Kshatriyas, if they are feel themselves subservient to the people in the mode of goodness, the Brahmins, then the people in the mode of goodness, the Brahmins, they can keep society on a spiritual direction. So it's important that the Brahmins actually are in the mode of goodness. And it's also clear in Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur so strongly make the point that it is by quality, not by janma, not by birth. Chatur vanam maya sistam guna karma vibhagasa, by the qualities, the guna and karma, not by, he doesn't say janma karma, he says guna karma vibhagasa, by the, it's all divided according to the qualities, and that changes everything. And in the old Vedic culture, there was, and even today, and less today, but in the old Vedic culture, there was very careful breeding, actually speaking, because people would only marry in their own caste. So therefore, the people who had Brahminical inclinations would marry Brahmins, and the children would be Brahmins by nature due to the breeding. So it was very, very scientific. And also how helpful it was to have someone, if you marry someone of a similar disposition, someone who thinks the way you do, who acts the way you do. So that made the family life, tended to make the family life more peaceful. And then from peaceful family life, there was good progeny, and the society would go on. So the head of all this, the top of all this, the position that was most essential, that gave the direction, that gave the spiritual perspective to society, was the Brahmins. And it's so, if someone is considered the highest in society by the amount of wealth he has, then what are the people who are, what relationship are the people who have less wealth going to have with that person? They're going to tend to be envious of him. They're going to want his wealth. But if a person's wealth is knowledge and his austerity, and if someone wants his wealth, his knowledge, he'll just, and the Brahman is so amazing by nature, he'll just give him that what he has, his knowledge. And there's no sense in being envious of him because they're simple and austere. That's the principle. So how brilliant, Krishna, by making the Vanashrama system as the cultural system that to organize society, how brilliant that the Brahmins are at the top. And they're especially not on the payroll of anyone. Because as soon as you have a boss, then it's part of the psychology of a human being that you want to please your boss. Either that, or you want to destroy him. That's what people hate their bosses, kill them. But then naturally you want to please your boss. That's just what happens in psychology. So therefore, you can't answer honestly. You can't speak with integrity always because you have to, the highest principles, you please your boss. So the Brahmins are independent, even though they may be very poor. In material wealth, they're satisfied on a different level because of the mode of goodness. It's the mode of goodness that actually brings satisfaction. So they're satisfied on a different level, and therefore they can be independent and satisfied with very little, and they will tend to not be greedy, and they won't accept employment. Prabhupada would call that the book to accept employment. No offense to anyone who has employment. It's the occupation of a...
Shudra,
but yes, but what else? You should say that when you graduate from the university, you get your degree, and then you have to go begging for work like a
dog.
Like a dog. That's the idea. Yeah, it's actually humiliating to some degree, and the Brahmins had to be able to speak their mind to be able to lead the society properly. So today's society is somewhat upside down in that sense. So Krishna was setting the example that the Kshatriyas, they should observe the etiquette of society and give full respect to the Brahmins. And in fact, the mood of the Kshatriyas was that the land actually belongs to the Brahmins, and they would govern on behalf of the Brahmins. So that when the four Kumaras came to see Parikit, Maharaj Prithu, he said he wanted to give them something in charity, but he said, because everything, all my kingdom, all that I have is already your property, what can I give you? So they would give in charity their kingdom to the Brahmins, and the Brahmins would, yeah, you take it. So even though the Ganga, the ultimate holy shrine, raise your hand if you've bathed in the Ganga. You have bathed in the Ganga? How many times? Unlimited times. Have you ever bathed in the Ganga?
Oh,
what? You should go now. Except it's the wrong season. When you go to India, you should bathe in the Ganga, because it's so purifying and frees the mind of distress too. It's also good for your health. So the Lord is the source of the purity of the Ganga because it has bathed his lotus feet. And yet the Ganga is pure because it contacts him, but yet he takes the feet that the water that has washed the feet of the Brahmins and places it upon his own head. So he's teaching by that. But how did Narada Muni feel? The purport here, the BBT purport says, since Lord Krishna's own lotus feet are the source of the most holy Ganga, the Lord did not have to purify himself by bathing Narada Muni's feet. Rather, as Srila Prabhupada explains, Lord Krishna and Dwarka enjoyed the pastimes of a perfect human being. When, therefore, he washed the feet of the great sage Narada and took the water on his head, Narada did not object, knowing well that the Lord did so to teach everyone how to respect saintly persons. Someone may protest that it is not proper for Krishna to wash the feet of his servant. Does anyone want to protest that? Anyone? Someone may, even though no one here except Jagatirini Mataji may. Do you think it's proper for Krishna to wash the feet of his own servant? Someone may protest anyway. You don't have to. But Krishna is called Brahmanya Deva, indicating his quality of being respectful to the Brahmins. Thus, since Narada is a Brahmin, it is appropriate that Krishna bathe his feet. It should not be said that Krishna behaved like this to purify himself, so this is the same message of the purport, since the Ganga, which is the ultimate purifying place, bathes his feet. Even though Narada is Krishna's servant, it should be understood that he did not reveal Krishna's superiority. Why didn't he say, you can't do this? Because you are the Supreme Lord, I am your servant. Because he was a servant, and he knew that Krishna wanted to do this to serve the Brahmins, so he didn't want to get in the way of what Krishna wanted, what a serving would. So he accepted this service. Next verse. After fully worshipping the great sage of the demigods according to Vedic injunctions, what is the word for great sage amongst the demigods?
Devarishi.
Yeah, Devarishi. You know anyone who has that as a name, Devarishi?
Yeah, he's known Devarishi.
Where is he? It's a long time ago.
Have they gone to the Devas?
Yeah.
Or to the Rishis?
Yeah. He's not in this world? Or?
I don't know, actually.
Yeah.
He's one in Mayapur.
Yeah. Pujari.
Probably. He has kind of Latin body.
Astrology, isn't he?
Yeah, also.
So after Lord Krishna, who is the original sage, Narayan, the friend of Nara, he conversed with Narada, and the Lord's measured speech was as sweet as nectar. Finally, the Lord asked Narada, what may we do for you, our Lord and Master? Karavama, so that's plural first person. What may we do? There's an old saying from Mark Twain. You ever hear of Mark Twain? American writer. He said the only people who can use, when they're referring to themselves, say we. He said people of royal families and people with tapeworms. It's funny. You could say we. Me and my tapeworm. Anyway, but Krishna didn't have tapeworms, but he was royalty. So he said, what may we do for you, our Lord and Master? So he's speaking to Narada like this. And Narada's reply is going to be very important, but we'll first read the purport, very short purport. In this verse, the words Narayano Narasaka indicate that Krishna is himself the Supreme Lord Narayan, who appeared as the friend of the sage Nara. In other words, Lord Krishna is Rishi Purana, the original and supreme spiritual master. Nevertheless, following the Vedic injunctions that a Kshatriya should worship the Brahmanas, Lord Krishna happily worshipped his pure devotee Narada Muni. So why is it essential that the Kshatriyas worship the Brahmins? Review question from the society point of view.
Because they're the head of society, they give them guidance.
And why do the Kshatriyas need guidance?
Because generally they are passionate.
And they must be in the mode of fasting. They have to be to rule. You have to be. You have to have a particular mood. You have to have a very big false ego, an Ishwara Bhav, yes. You need that to be a ruler. In Ayurveda, there's much discussion on that you need ahankara. Ahankara, we talk about ahankara or false ego in a very negative way. But it really means a strong sense of self. So, of course, it's false. So, therefore, because we're really Krishna's eternal servants. But when Ayurveda talks about ahankara, they talk about that you need that to do anything in this world. And if you don't have a strong sense of self, you're mentally unstable. Huh?
You're not a
kshatriya. You're not a kshatriya, you're not in anything. You won't be able to do anything. Be mentally broken.
But if everyone has a strong sense of self, then how will they work together?
Because everyone's position is very structured. So the kshatriyas, they had a very simple system of working together. He who is more powerful ruled. So, and if you didn't work with your local kshatriya, and you were a minor kshatriya, they would kill you. It was very simple. And the Brahmins, their sense of self was humble. And the vices, they were kept in check because they weren't huge, powerful vices like today.
Because
it's another kshatriya that's meant to be huge about it. Yeah. Or the kshatriyas become, without kshatriya dharma, they just become money makers.
Mm-hmm. Where did the kshatriyas go?
Huh?
Where did the kshatriyas go? I mean, still evidence of Brahmins and the rest of the caste system. You never hear of a kshatriya caste.
The caste specifically, or
yeah.
The people with those qualities?
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, if you had both of that, I guess both.
No, there, of course, in the people of the kshatriya caste are still there. Yeah, they're there in India, not it. And also, you do see people with that nature. But there's one thing to have the nature, and the other thing is that you have to cultivate it and be trained properly. So someone who doesn't have the nature, and if he cultivates that particular quality, he can gain something, but he can't arise to great excellence. But if you have the nature and the body, and you're trained, then you can become extremely excellent. Punjabi is famous in India for having, they're all Sikhs. They have that strong nature. The Rajasthanis, the Rajputs, they're like that. Gujaratis are known for other things. Your Gujarati family?
Yes,
they went to Europe.
Egypt?
No. It's in the Bhagavatam. Or it comes from the Mahabharata, I think, actually. When Parsaram killed, he drove the Kshatriyas, he was so angry at them. So he drove them out of India and they went to Greece and things like that. They went to Europe.
Long time ago.
There are people with great martial spirit, but they don't have the rest of the kshatriya dharma, the compassion. Often, they can be very cruel. But there are people with martial spirit. In, in the Kshatriyas there are different castes too. Within the Kshatriyas there are different divisions. There's, I don't know how many, but there's so many different subgroups, and people are very also amongst the Brahmins too. And you can if you, yeah, it's very systematic if there's nine different Kshatriya castes, and a man from the sixth caste marries a lady from the eighth caste or ninth caste who's higher than him, even by that much, so you know, the marriage doesn't work very well because she'll have a pride. Well, she'll have more pride, and she won't listen like that. So there's something called, what is it called, Anuloma Pratiloma marriages, different kinds of system. But the idea was to have the family set up in a particular way that it would be peaceful, and the children would be what?
Krishna Vamsha.
Well, at least carry on the traditions, and then ultimately Krishna. So the Lord asked Narada Muni, what may we do for you, our Lord and Master? So the Supreme Lord asked the Brahmana, how can we serve you? You've come here. So when people come to a place, there's a particular purpose in their coming. So what is your purpose? What can we give you? What can we do for you? How can we serve you? So the next verse, Narada Muni says, he replies, O Almighty Lord, it is no surprise that you, the ruler of all the worlds, show friendship for all people, and yet subdue the envious. As well as we well know, you descend by your sweet will in order to bestow the highest good on this universe by maintaining and protecting it. Your glories are widely sung. So he glorifies Krishna. So what does he say? I'll read it again. It is no surprise that you, the ruler of all worlds, show friendship for all people, and yet you subdue the envious. So even though you are friendly to everyone, samoham, sarvabhuteshu, namedveshastinapriya, still it is your duty, your purpose in coming, that those who are inimical, you subdue them, even though it is not with enmity. You do it as your duty, as your service to humanity. As we well know, you descend by your sweet will, because you act by your sweet will in a way according as you like, in order to bestow the highest good on this universe by maintaining and protecting it. So a main part of maintaining and protecting the universe is specifically the maintenance of society and the culture of society. And then he says, your glories are widely sung. So in the purport, as pointed out by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, all living beings are in fact servants of the Lord. The Acharya quotes the following verse from the Padma Purana to elucidate: Akareno chite Vishnu Sri U Karena Katyate Makaras Tu Tayodasha Panchavimsa Prakirtitaha. In the mantra Om, the letter A signifies Lord Vishnu, the letter U signifies the goddess Sri, and the letter M, the final consonant, refers to their servant, who is the 25th element. The 25th element is the Jiva, the living being. Every living being is a servant of the Lord, and the Lord is the true friend of every living being. Thus, even when the Lord chastises envious persons like Jarasandha, that's going to happen very soon. And it's already happened, but he's going to kill him. How is the Lord going to kill Jarasandha? Through beam. Both the Lord's chastisements and his blessings are for the benefit of the living beings. So now Narada Muni says, yes, what do you want? He glorifies the Lord. And then he says, now I have seen your feet, which grant liberation to your devotees, which even Lord Brahma and other great personalities of unfathomable intelligence can only meditate upon within their hearts, and which those who have fallen into the well of material existence resort to for deliverance. So now I've seen your lotus feet. And then there's some explanations of different people's relationship with Krishna's lotus feet. Now I've seen these same feet. Here's the first thing that they do. They grant liberation to your devotees. Which even Lord Brahma and other great personalities of unfathomable, that means inestimably deep, intelligence can only meditate upon in your heart. So the first quality is they give liberation. If the devotee takes shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, Krishna's service, he becomes free from this material world. And those same lotus feet which Brahma which Narada is seeing, they give liberation. And even he's seeing them with his own two eyes, and great personalities who are unlimitedly intelligent, like Brahma, who is Narada's father, can only meditate upon them within their hearts. They cannot see him. And he's thinking, I'm so fortunate that I've seen your lotus feet. And those who have fallen into the well of material existence, this is the third thing, they turn to those feet for deliverance. That's the well of material existence. Why is it compared to a well, material existence? You have to say, true or false. It is called a well because in material world and material existence things, everything always goes well.
False.
False. Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Because next is because why is it called a well of material existence then? Well, first thing is you have to get in. How do you fall in a well?
You fall in against your better judgment.
Not against your better judgment, but you don't see it's there.
Mm. You fall in the well because you want to enjoy the well.
No.
Because you want to enjoy the material nature, that's why we are over here.
No. You want to lord it over something, but you don't see what's going to happen. So the example of why it's called a well is because in the fields there is a well, and the well is covered, in the middle of the field it's covered by grass, and you don't see it's there. Have you ever seen such a well like that? Have you?
Yeah.
Did you ever fall in such a well?
No, but
I know someone who did, and he broke tens of bones in his body. He broke. He was on Padyatra, huh? Because you're walking along and it's covered by grass and you don't see it, you don't know what's going to happen. So we try to do something, try to be independent of Krishna, and instead we fall into this dark well and in the field. And what happens if you're in the middle of a field wandering around and you fall into a well that's covered by grass like that? What will you do? Say you break your bones, what will you do? It's deep and dark. What do? You call out, you scream, but there's no one around because it's in the middle of the field. So you have to suffer so much. And it's also compared sometimes that there are a well full of snakes, Grihamanda Kupam. But then the question is, how do the snakes get in there?
They're at home.
They live there and they can't get out either, right? How is a snake going to get out of the well? Because snakes can't use ladders.
They dig burrows.
Huh?
They dig burrows.
They dig burrows, but not in a well. They can't get out like that. Wells are so deep. Sometimes tens and tens and tens and tens. So they're in there, and they just live down there in this dark, damp well, and you fall in there, and there's snakes in there.
Who has made that well so deep?
Huh?
Who has made that well?
You're talking about if in the well or in the analogy? Which you want to know first?
I want to know about first.
The actual well.
Actual, and then
well, then you, what happens is you build a. Why do you build a well? To get water. And then the water dries up due to one reason or another, and then there's a big, big well that has no use anymore, and you forget about it and find another way to get water. But who has made the material world? Who has made the prison? The government. Government makes the prison. Who makes the prison? Mm-hmm. The government. Who is governing the material world? Who is governing all of existence makes the material world. And but they don't. One would think that just like the government says, here's the law. Don't break the law. I warn you not to break the law. And then if you break the law, then you have to go to the prison. So there must be some understanding that the soul gets. Don't do this. Don't turn your back on the Lord. Don't turn your back on Krishna Mule Sinjeev. Don't do it. Don't do it. And then the living entity must say, I want to do it. Don't do it. You won't like it. So hard to get out. It's easy to get in, but so difficult to get out. Don't do it. But I want to. Okay. Easy to get in, but difficult to get out.
But then we say that every living entity has a, you know, mahatmas, you know, what do you call it? Paramatma.
Oh yeah.
Then why is it that being part of Krishna, because somebody gets drawn so much into the well?
The Paramatma is there with every conditioned soul. The ones in the spiritual world, they don't have a Paramatma with them. They have the Paramatma with them in a different way. In front of them is Krishna. Or Lord Narayan, but in the material world, everyone has the Paramatma in their heart, every soul with them. So, what was the question?
So, why is it that being there, the Paramatma being in every individual who's in the material existence, gets drawn further and deeper into Maya?
He doesn't if he recognizes as a Paramatma that the Lord is with me and I should listen to him. Then he won't get drawn further and deeper into Maya. But still, we are very stubborn sometimes. And when the modes of material nature control us, it's very hard to turn to Krishna.
Doesn't the Paramatma call or beckon them to turn?
Yes, but we don't listen. So we say, Tora Badmi. We say, have something to do first. I want to do this. I guess then I'll come later. But if someone once, just sincerely one time, tries to turn to Krishna, Krishna will never let him fully be in Maya again. So the Paramatma is very kind.
Sometimes we see people who turn to Krishna and they think about everything and they feel horrible.
How do we understand it? Well, we can't understand it, except, but the point is, how does Krishna understand it? He he's the expert at balancing all these things. And we have to, unless it's specifically our duty, we have to allow Krishna to work out this delicate balance between his merciful aspect and all the other aspects. That's one of his expertises, to find how to deal with every living entity in the proper way. So there's one little thing about Prabhupada that Parvati mentioned. How do you say poverty in Australian?
Poverty.
Poverty. Yeah, poverty. How would you say poverty in Bengali? In Bengali accent.
The word poverty or poverty?
the one who's married to Lord Shiva.
Poverty.
Yes, like that.
There you go.
Yeah, it sounds proper. But Lord Shiva, he lives with poverty. Both ways. Either way. So anyway, she told me that there was one devotee, it was an old devotee when they were in the temple, in the Calcutta temple, in Albert Road. And he was very strong-minded and everything. So there was the BBT go-down with all the books were, and it was kept locked, and he wanted a book, so he just broke down the go-down. He just broke down the door. And he just went in and took what he wanted. So the devotee who was in charge of the PPT went to Prabhupada, and he said, "Prabhupada, this devotee just broke down that PPT go-down, he wanted a book, and he just took what he wanted." And Prabhupada said, "Let him do what he wants. He helped me so much in the early days." But I bet no one else does. So how did Prabhupada balance it sometimes? And he was very, very tolerant. And it was his BBT anyway. But in any case, how to balance, you know, when you have a person who, like Krishna, doesn't forget when one does a service for him. He doesn't forget that forever. But then if someone does something else using his free will, Krishna somehow has to balance all these different things. But how he deals with that person is not the same way the material energy deals with them, even though it may sometimes appear to be like that. He never forgets them, and he keeps an eye on them. Like the example is given of the son of the rich man who's a beggar, who's living, turned his back on his father, and living in the streets. But the father keeps an eye on him, different from an actual poor man, poverty-stricken man. Poverty. How do you say it? How did you say it again? It sounded so nice.
Parvati.
Yes, so nice. How do you say it?
Parvati.
The same as Parvati.
Yes. Poverty. Prabhu, you want to do?
I just remember one example. One devotee wrote to Prabhupada, this devotee gave me trouble and this and that, and he was kind of involved in management. But then he said, it was like when you milk a cow, sometimes the cow will kick, but you want the milk, so you have to tolerate. It's like Prabhupada was sometimes tolerating the misdeeds of devotees for the sake of moment.
Yeah. But in some cases, in this case, the cow had stopped giving milk a long time ago, and still he tolerated because he remembered that, oh, this cow gave such nice milk when I really needed it, when I was thirsty and I had no nourishment. He fed me. So what happened? So this is what now. So he's saying, "Oh, we have to stop now." But why do we have to stop now? We do. Because this is just when pastime is reaching its summit, in one sense. So he says, you descend by your free will in order to bestow the highest good on this universe by maintaining and protecting it. Thus your glories are widely sung. Everyone is singing, widely singing the glories of Krishna, that he's in his avatars, his incarnations. But the next verse, he's going to, because the Lord asked him, "What do you want, Narada?" And the next thing, he's going to say what he wants. Must stay tuned. Of course, you can open the book and look if you're really curious. Don't. Stay tuned. Tomorrow we shall continue Krishna willing. Any question or comments?
I think it's astounding that allowed him to pay the fee and that he responded dismissively and Lord did it.
Yes, sir.
Did he also do that to his best friend once
upon a time?
Sudama.
Sudama? Because he was a Brahmana. There's many, many instances given in the Bhagavad Gita when Krishna does that. He respects the Brahmins. Many instances. But the reason is that because they are meant to speak about him and order society properly, give the proper head or intelligence to society about what the purpose of the whole thing is. Because nowadays, is there any consideration of what the act from the management of the people's side, from the government side, about what the actual purpose of life is? Do they ever speak about that?
No.
Yeah, it's not from the government. They talk about the budget, they talk about the economy, they talk about the stock market, they talk badly mostly. Do they still have a pub in Poland? Really? Because you know, who suggested it was because 30 years ago? Subhabadi. He was running for office. Somewhere in Australia, right? Sure, right. So that was his platform. He said
he must have gone zero vote.
I think so. But that was one of the principles that they should close the bar. And what did they do? Did they close it?
They just ridiculed him. They
ridiculed him for such a...
Huh? He was made a joke of.
Amazing, yeah.
Did you have,
okay, if it's sensitive issue, I'm not sure we should ask. Good. But I'll answer it sensitively.
Yes.
I'll try my best.
What is the point of creation of a different religion? What is the existence of different religions? What is the purpose of creating all these different religions?
Who created them?
Well, everything is controlled by Krishna, so there must be a purpose by his...
But there's two ways Krishna controls everything. One is that he sanctions things, and the other is he controls it directly, and there's a great difference between the two. So the general principle, this is not specifically answering your question, but the general principle is that when Krishna doesn't want something particularly, but a living entity wants to do it, he says, because nothing can happen, Upadras Hanumanta, he's the permitter, he permits something to happen, even though it's not what he wants. And then there's when he directly controls something, you do this, you do this, you do that. So there's a big difference. So the different religions are meant to elevate people, if they're true religions, to stop them from misusing their lives and get them to use their life to find the real purpose of life. That's the purpose of religion. So why are there different religions and why do they fight? That's not what Krishna wants, but that's what happens in this material world, because this is just the nature of the material world, because because we're all proud and envious. But also in the religions born out of the Middle East, they have really a different mood than the religions born out of, say, India. The religions born out of India are very accepting. So if you could have, like, there was the Hindu Dharma or the Vedic religion, and then there were some discrepancies in it. So then 2,500 years ago, Buddha comes and he starts preaching his Buddhist religion, his principles, and even though they weren't atheistic actually, but they were outside the Vedic culture completely, and then there were other religious principles started within the Vedic culture, but they didn't fight. They talked, they argued philosophically, but they didn't try and kill each other. So there's people who believed in yoga, and there's people who believed they're worshippers of Lord Shiva. And there were people who were Vaishnavas, and they're followers of Shankaracharya, they're Mayavadis and Personas. So they argued, and they would debate, but they didn't kill each other, generally. But the religions of the born in the Middle East are quite different. That if you don't, worship the way we do, we're going to kill you to prove to you how merciful we are. Yeah, so that was when the Muslims came to India in 1,200 years ago or something like that. This was very, because the Indian religions tended to incorporate everything, if something, anyway. Must be powerful. The Buddha's coming preaching against it. He must be an incarnation. How can he be so powerful unless he's being empowered by Krishna? So we accept him as incarnation of Vishnu. Something. So, but this was the first time when the Muslims came, and then followed later by the Christians, that they had a completely different mood. Different mood than the Indian religions. Our way is the only way. We fight to the death. Yes, that's why we can also say they are Malecha religions. They are born out of that place. They got their philosophy from those religions didn't have an indigenous culture around it like the Vedic religion did. So they got their so much of their religion and philosophy from Aristotle and Plato. all of them, even the Muslims. And Christians, Augustine was a Plato worshipper, a Greek philosopher. Not worshipper, but that's what converted him. He found some intellectuals.
This is how you get, in the name of something, you achieve your ends. In the name of politics, you achieve your ends. In the name of charity, you achieve your ends. In the name of religion, you achieve your ends.
And what's the actual aim of religion? Other than your aim,
yeah.
What's the aim of the religion?
To acknowledge God, to serve Him, to please Him, to love Him.
Kali, yeah, and so many, there's the, yeah, and everything polarizes in Kali Yuga. So there's more and more fighting and quarrel.
Can I ask my last question?
The final question. Yeah, let's see.
Okay, in the last 100 years, there's been a lot of activity, and probably increase in Maya, and yet we say that we just, the beginning of Kali Yuga, and this is 5,000 years into Kali Yuga, and there's so many thousands of years yet to come.
Just imagine.
So, I mean, how it's unprecedented the way it just expanded so much, you know, in the last 100-150 years, the way there's been a deterioration. So, are we going to make it
to the end?
No, in terms of humanity.
Okay.
Probably in search of.
Is humanity going to, or are they going to, is everyone going to turn into animals?
When is Kalki going to sort of disappear?
A long time. Just imagine how bad it's going to be. I mean, it's going to get so bad in Kali Yuga that women are going to kill their own children in the womb. That's quite amazing, isn't it? And this is just the beginning. But that's what I'm saying. It's so bad, you won't be able to drink the water. It's going to be so bad in Kali Yuga. It's already happening. And the air will get polluted, and the seas and the ocean will get polluted, and there'll be no vegetables. The land, there'll be no rain. And if someone invites you to the house for dinner, you have to be careful, because you might be the dinner. Come over for lunch today.
What's on the menu?
Oh, you'll find out. The 12th canto of the Bhagavatam describes, it says that the government, they will be only cheaters. See how things are already happening. And no one has respect for the government leaders. It's a very bad thing, actually, for society. People will go off to the forest to get away from the taxation.
Another fruit and vegetables.
People will revolt.
Huh? They'll be revolting. They're already revolting. Most people. Did you notice that? They're revolting.
Inside you hear stop.
This is a